You're listening to Catch the Current, the coolest seafood podcast out there from the team at Undercurrent News, your trusted source for seafood prices, news, and data. I'm Amanda Buckle.
And I'm Lauren Castiglione. As promised, we've got a special episode today all about the Global Shrimp Forum, which took place in Utrecht, the Netherlands from September 2nd to the 4th. But before we dive in, a quick shout out to our sponsor, Wise Fish. With over 30 years in the seafood industry, they're powering aquaculture, fisheries, processors, and seafood sales with one integrated platform that makes managing complex operations simpler. Check them out at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent.
We've got a party joining us on the pod to talk about the big takeaways from the Global Shrimp Forum. Calling in from London is Tom Seaman, the co-founder and editor-in-chief of Undercurrent News, Louis Harkel, our global head of price reporting and data journalism, and EMEA deputy editor Dan Gibson. And then joining us in from beautiful New Jersey is Gary Morrison, our principal price reporter.
Okay, guys, let's get down to the nitty gritty because this event came at a time when global shrimp trade flows are reshuffling due to U.S. tariffs. Plus, in the U.S., a major import alert banning shrimp from a major Indonesian producer. So let's start there. Tom, was BMS's import alert for cesium-137 contamination brought up at all during the forum?
It was. It was quite a big discussion point, because there's a lot of concern in the sector, which maybe Gary can also talk more about later, that it could cause kind of wider reputational damage to shrimp as a product, with this kind of radioactive shrimp, in inverted commas, tag being widely used. And it was interesting to speak to some Indonesian industry figures about this. Aris Utama from BMI, which is another big processor, spoke on a panel about how there's not really clear where this actually came from. It's kind of an anomaly. You know, Indonesia isn't a nuclear power in any way, so there's no real way that people were thinking this contamination could have happened, given that Indonesia has no nuclear power at all. And then I spoke with Liris, the CEO of Jala, which is an Indonesian kind of aquatech company supplying farmers with technology. And it's obviously a very critical issue for them, because their customers, the farmers that supply BMS, which is one of, if not the largest Indonesian shrimp exporter to the US, are obviously being heavily impacted by this. And it was, very interesting to chat to her. She kind of gave a message, which has then been reported by the AP and other news outlets, that the findings of Indonesia's investigations into this show that it wasn't from the shrimp farms, this very low-level contamination, wasn't from the shrimp farms, wasn't from the BMS plant, and it wasn't from the water they would be using in the shrimp farming. It seems the contamination has come from a nearby metal smelting disposal facility, which is in the same kind of industrial area as this one BMS plant, which is in Banten, which is in West Java, so kind of not too far from Jakarta. And that seems to be what now is kind of being highlighted as where this has come from. So it's kind of traces that somehow got into the containers before they shipped. It was only four containers, I think, that went to four separate US ports from this one plant. But then obviously the knock-on effect of that is there's two other BMS plants in different parts of Indonesia. One is in a place, Medan, which is kind of another island. It's on North Sumatra, kind of the northern bit of the Sumatra island. So this is 2,000 miles from where this kind of contamination took place. And this plant is also basically unable to export to the US, although there's kind of no intertrade between it and the plant that's impacted, because it's so far away. Yeah, Liris was explaining to me it's pretty terrible for the farmers in that area, because they don't have any other processing plants to sell to. They have this BMS plant, and then there is one very much smaller plant. So BMS is processing maybe 20,000, 25,000 tons in that plant. The other plant does about four or something. So the farmers in that area are suffering huge decreases in price and demand, because they just don't have any other markets for their product. And this plant has kind of really got nothing to do with this. It's just owned by the same company, but it's sort of 2,000 miles from the one that's had this incident. So it's something, I think, where, Amanda, you've reported on, that there's lawyers working on behalf of the Indonesian exporters to get these two other plants that the BMS own potentially reopened, even if the one where the contamination originated from remains closed. A very interesting issue.
Yeah, and they're close. I mean, they have conversations now with the FDA. They're waiting to hear back if their request to have those other facilities be allowed to be taken off that import alert. So we should have an answer, you know, within the next week or so. But unfortunately, it's still not, I don't think enough. Just last week, US Senator John Kennedy, a Louisiana Republican, longtime and still practicing medical doctor, spreading fear surrounding the import of radioactive shrimp from Indonesia, saying that you can grow an ear and you could look like an alien. So
There is a fear. That's what Lewis from JALA was saying, that there's, and this could potentially impact, all countries of origin. There was a couple of Ecuadorian processors I spoke with who kind of saying, oh, this could be positive for us because, it'll be associated with Asian shrimp. But I don't really think that the US consumer would necessarily be making a distinction between Ecuadorian or Asian shrimp. I think that you never quite know with these things. Sometimes these things just kind of fizzle out and go away with the crazy news cycle that we have now. And sometimes they kind of stick and do impact demand, and I guess it's very hard to know where this one will go. But what is kind of emerging is that, this isn't an issue about the shrimp. I mean, it really could have been like anything in those containers that, then reached the US. It's kind of more about proximity between this shrimp factory and then this kind of metal smelting facility. So
what I've talked to people about, especially at the Global Shrimp Forum, right? There's definitely headline risk. U.S. consumers hear radioactive shrimp, and it's broad throughout the industry. I don't think they're going to identify just Indonesian-sourced shrimp. I think there is going to be some sort of risk for all shrimp if this continues to stay top of mind and in the news, because I don't know if the U.S. consumer differentiates where their shrimp come from. In terms of imported farm-raised product, I moderated the plenary closing session, which looked at the outlook over the short to medium term, next 3 to 6 months, on all these different factors that are influencing higher cost structures throughout the value chain, as well as trade flow changes because of them. And we had some really, really expertise on the panel. I was honored to host it and moderate it and be a part of a panel with some of the the people in the industry that we had, Angel Rubio, Gabriel Luna, Taka Watanabe, and Jacob George. So, we talked about what's going on, mostly from a US perspective, but how these trade flows are going to change globally. So on the, on the panel, I think the big takeaways, because Tom talked about it a little bit with Indonesia and India thinking that, Ecuador thinking that they have an advantage, and not only because of, some of the alerts, but because of the tariff advantage and competitiveness that they have over some of the Asian source countries. But I think the big takeaways are Ecuador, they were moving into value add prior to tariffs. They wanted to meet the needs of the US consumer a little bit better, but the tariffs are accelerating it. But number two, there is going to be a challenge. They are at capacity right now, so they can't fulfill any more demand or very minimal in excess of what they're doing now. So the other main takeaway is that India and other Asian source countries are going to be key partners still, because each one of those countries have their own unique strengths and capabilities, and it's going to be hard for other countries to make that capital investment in the short term. Maybe structurally long term, things start to change, but right now, it's not only Ecuador. US importers do have to source from their Asian partners. And right now, businesses really want certainty. They think things can change on a dime with this administration. So I think, they want to make sure they can plan, and uncertainty is certainly a risk for them.
Aquaculture is evolving fast, and managing fish farming alongside processing, sales, and logistics means handling complex data daily. Wise Fish offers an integrated platform built specifically for aquaculture and seafood businesses. It collects data from farms, linking biological and financial insights so you can track costs and yields clearly. The system captures, for example, feed and medication usage, biomass increase, mortality, labor, and equipment costs to give a full picture of profitability. It also supports planning across harvest, sales, and deliveries, helping you make smarter decisions with accurate, up-to-date information. By replacing spreadsheets and siloed systems, Wise Fish reduces manual work and errors, freeing time to focus on growth. Whether scaling or optimizing workflows, Wise Fish helps improve efficiency and control costs without disrupting your existing systems. Learn more at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent.
So Gary was up on stage. We talked about Amanda being there up on stage last week. Dan, my sources are telling me that you were just in the audience eating shrimp. Is that right?
Well, yeah, it has played problems listening back to my dictaphone from that meeting. I can largely hear myself chewing for most of it. And occasionally hear Amanda over the top, but that's about the extent of it, really. From what I can glean from it, the main takeaway from the Global Shrimp Council session was that they are, in the coming weeks, going to be launching their first campaign outside of the US in both France and Spain. And it's personally, I thought it was quite interesting they're going for both, because, of course, the whole reason they avoided Europe to begin with is because, whereas the US is such a nice big market, we all speak the same language, Europe is such a split up, divided market where everybody would need a different tailored marketing campaign for their different cultural tastes. Like, what they eat in Spain is very different to what they eat in France, what's very different to what they eat here in the UK. And so it's interesting they've targeted both. And I think that then ties in very nicely to probably my biggest takeaway from the whole show, which is that Europe right now is the boom market for shrimp, and nobody saw it coming. This year, I mean, just this morning, we published a headline that the EU is expected to increase its imports to 400,000 tons this year. And last year, it was 320,000. And I mean, the EU is an incredibly mature market. It hasn't really changed for about a decade. You either like shrimp and you buy it, or you don't, so you don't. And good luck finding a European who doesn't know what a prawn is or, you know, how to cook it. So, yeah, it's just stunning. There's been this sudden, 21% increase year on year. And that's expected to continue for the rest of the year, even as the US is dropping off and as China is turning more to its own domestic production. And it sounds like the big driver basically has been that they were, you know, it's better than expected winter consumption. And as soon as Trump announces his tariffs in April and the price of shrimp drops globally, everybody around Europe went, all right, let's get in while prices are low. And it seems like every country has had the same idea, basically just had this sudden huge increase. And for the most part, I'd say the two big beneficiaries have been Ecuador and India, obviously the two biggest producers. So if you need more shrimp, they're the ones you speed dial. And I'd say on the Ecuadorian side of things, see Venezuela, their biggest producer, Grupo Lamar, got taken over by the Venezuelan government. And that has absolutely slashed volumes out of there. And their loss has been Ecuador's gain. Very similar products, so they just swoop right in. Their volumes to Europe so far this year up 39%. That's mad. And then on the flip side, India, they're up about 25% this year. And for them, I mean, given that there's now this huge tariff to the US, this is potentially huge for them as an outlet for basically, if they're struggling to get any fresh demand from America, try Europe, basically. That's the big thing there for them. So there, I suppose it should also be mentioned, the elephant in the room where India is concerned is that there is a list, a new antibiotic list. And I believe this has been well published before, but basically the EU in its infinite wisdom has drawn up a list of countries who are allowed to export organic materials to the EU, and India is not included as of yet. And this list will take effect next September, and their government basically needs to prove that they are doing or taking sufficient steps and due diligence to enforce these rules that no antibiotics are used in the production of farm shrimp, among other things. And what was interesting at the show was to see the huge cultural difference between how Indians operate and how Europeans operate, or how at least how the EU operates. And I mean, it would be funny if there weren't so many livelihoods at stake, but basically India has a very much, it's a year away, we'll deal with it, it'll be fine. You know, who's to worry about it? And then Willem van der Pye, the show host, he knows how long European bureaucracy takes. I think they wrote an entire Asterix book in which, you know, they just have to get a permit from French bureaucracy, and that's enough to create an entire story about it. So he's saying, you know, this would take, if you don't make it on the list, it will take at least 9 months to get you on it in the future. So deal with it now. Give yourself more time than you could possibly think you would ever need to deal with, because this is Europe you're dealing with. This is the EU. Allow basically half a lifetime to get stuff done.
So, Louis, last but not least, we heard from everybody else there. I know you ate your fill of shrimp, but what was your big takeaways from the Global Shrimp Forum?
I think my big takeaway was the fact that it appears that most of the main big producers are just seem to be able to keep exporting increasing volumes of shrimp. And Ecuador, India, Vietnam, and Indonesia all reporting higher export volumes. And I suppose that's a surprise. You expect maybe one or two among them, but all four of the biggest producers in the world, yeah, they're all exporting more shrimp. And so if you're in the industry, I mean, I presume that's great news, right? It means people around the world are eating more shrimp, and, you know, farmers are getting, you know, more people farming and more people earning money through the supply chain. So yeah, that was kind of the key takeaway, I think. I think the big hitter is, as always, Ecuador. And the exports have really gone gangbusters at the start of this year, growing by 17%. And I think, you know, when a country is exporting over 1 million tons of shrimp every year already, that's an enormous increase. It's about 200,000 tons over a calendar year. So, you know, when you think that Thailand is producing around 200,000 tons or exporting around that much, you know, that's a huge increase in volume on the global market, right? And we've already, as I've already mentioned, India, Vietnam and Indonesia are already also exporting higher volumes. So, yeah, I think that was the kind of the key takeaway one for me. Ecuador really just powering ahead. And I think the interesting thing was, you know, what the explanation for that was. And that came from like Sandro Cogliatori of Amasa. And he kind of put it down to, because last year, Ecuador's export growth was pretty flat. Like they didn't grow and everyone was like, okay, well, Ecuador has reached the ceiling. I mean, China's not really buying much more and that's their main market. But actually, it turned out that they were just having a kind of a breather after all this consolidation of these shrimp farms around the country. And Sanjo said, yeah, now that, you know, rolling out this new technology to these smaller farms, the yields are increasing. And that's why, you know, 2025, we've seen this big increase. And he expects that to continue into next year. So, yeah, I mean, that is possibly going to be alarming for other producers around the world to think that, you know, Ecuador could be producing yet more shrimp, not just in the second half of this year, but then going into 2026. And also, like, you know, prices haven't collapsed yet. And so obviously, if there's a big collapse in prices, that's going to be putting a hold on things. But at the moment, prices are still, you know, relatively okay. I mean, I don't think producers are seeing dollar signs, you know, when they're harvesting and selling their shrimp to processors and exporters. But it seems like prices are holding okay for Ecuador to keep producing these huge volumes. So yeah, I think that's going to be one to keep an eye on. Like Ecuador, can it maintain this growth? And yeah, you can see more on our blog.
From Row to Plate, Wise Fish supports seafood businesses across aquaculture, fisheries, processing, and sales with one integrated platform. Trusted by companies around the world like Tassel, Nilsfair, and others, Wise Fish helps control costs, improve margins, and enable smarter financial decisions, replacing spreadsheets and siloed systems. Learn more at wisefish.com/catchthecurrent.